Hello, and welcome to Stardust Records, a Star Wars podcast. I'm Savi, and I'm here with my co-host, Linz. And we are here to talk about the most recent Star Wars release, Skeleton Crew, Episodes 1 and 2. Episode 1 was titled, This Could Be a Real Adventure, and Episode 2 was titled, Way, Way Out Past the Barrier. So, quick first thoughts, just a summary of how you felt before we dive really deep into it. What did you think of both episodes, Linz?
I just had the most fun. I was really transported back to being around that age as you know, same age as these kids. And I spent a lot of time outside as a kid. And so seeing them, you know, exploring and sort of just being outside, fake playing lightsabers, that was me with my brothers. So I was really transported back to my own childhood, which I feel like it's going to be a consensus for a lot of viewers after watching these episodes. I loved it. What about you?
Yeah, definitely a similar feel. I was thinking the whole time in that first episode how much it felt like almost looking back on being a kid in a way. It was like a window to that age again. Like with him saying, with Wim staying up late to read the picture book or the data pad equivalent of a picture book, and then, like you said, like playing lightsabers and, you know, worrying so much about school and and the little tassels on the bike and things like that. It was a really great callback to that year, to those years, I think, for a lot of us, or for for like anybody at any age watching this, I feel like they can look back fondly and be like, oh, I remember being a little stinker.
Exactly. Even the claimsies scene where they're bickering back and forth about who has rights to this archaeological find that they're about to embark on.
Yeah.
I loved that. I definitely, like you mentioned, how Wim stayed up late reading his picture book. That was me with Nancy Drew.
Yeah, that scene reminded me of Jim from Treasure Planet. It felt very Treasure Planet-y. Yeah, when like his mom comes in the room, but yeah, it felt like that scene where he opens up his.
Well, and to build on that point of yours, Wim is like Jim from Treasure Island, Treasure Planet, and I think his name's, they called him Silvo in the subtitles at the beginning of the show when we see the scene of the pirates, you know, boarding the ship and the captain, the masked helmeted captain, he was called Silvo in the subtitles, which, I mean, has to be a nod to Long John Silver from Treasure Island. So
yeah.
Just building on your little Treasure Planet nod there, I definitely feel like this is for sure supposed to be, there's supposed to be Treasure Island references in this.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of references put into one bigger story. Like it felt at some points a little bit like Back to the Future. It felt a little bit like Stranger Things. It felt a little bit like the Goonies and things like that. Like, I know it's a modern day Star Wars that we're getting now in 2024, but I feel like if you added, like they did with some of the trailers and the teasers, if you added like a VHS effect to it, it would feel timeless, I think. I think that's a good way to describe this show, is it's timeless.
And I think on top of all of that that we've mentioned, one other thing that I really admired about this show that it had me smiling so much was, and you'll probably understand this too, or anyone who works with children will understand this or has kids of their own. These kids, the dialogue, the writing, their interactions are so accurate to like kids of this age. Like the silly bickering, the random comments, the just all of it was so very much it was just so accurate. And I loved it. I was laughing. I was like, these kids are so funny. And they act like they would, which, I mean, that should be a no-brainer, but to really kind of capture that so well, I think is a feat in itself. And the kids are just such good actors. I love them.
I think my favorite performance has to be Neil. I mean, it must be hard to have that costume on, but the way that his body moves and like his hands move and his head, I feel like he does a really good job like emulating a kid. I know that he was a kid when they were filming it. Now I guess they're a little bit older, but yeah, I don't know. They like you said, they definitely to write a kid as an adult, I feel like you really have to inwardly go somewhere to like revert back to what you were like as a kid, or thinking about like how girl like one of the points that I loved in the show that was made was like the girls versus boys thing when
Yes.
that's like such a kid thing to do.
When Fern called them Stinko boys, I was like, this is awesome. And Neil just had so many good lines. And like when he's like, the dirt's dirty.
I know. Yeah, I was like, did I hear that right?
So concerned about, like, he's like, and when he was complaining about the captain's room being all dusty, and he's like, you don't really want to sleep here, do you? I love that. I love that all these kids have such distinct just quirks to them. I almost felt like in some of the scenes, specifically the cockpit scenes where they're up in the they're trying to figure out, how to fly the ship or where to go, and some of their interactions, I was just like, I wonder if the directors just like put them into this situation and said, this is what's going on. Now react how you think that they would react in this situation, because I just will keep harping on this, their interactions and the dialogue just flowed so well. I don't know how to explain it. It almost felt like they just said ad lib it. This is what's going on. I'm sure that's not what happened, but it just made me laugh so much.
Well, with the in the Skytalker's interview with the cast of the kids, the gal who plays KB, her name is leaving me, but she said that John and Chris said that she could explore the character on her own. So maybe that's why it feels that way, is because they were able to have like a little bit more creative freedom in their character where they can kind of insert themselves in a way. So maybe that's why it felt a little bit more like the reactions were more realistic or ad-libbed almost, because in a way they were.
I love that.
One of my favorite things about episode one was because I feel like we got a lot of this in it since we were on this planet for basically the whole time, is that it felt so like to see a suburbs in a Star Wars was almost a little jarring. We don't really get to see that. It was like in Guardians of the Galaxy, the third one, where they go to the planet, or they go to a planet that's kind of like Earth, and it has like sidewalks and garages and things like that. But then I was put back into Star Wars when I saw an Ithorian walking some sort of dog thing. But I like that it's a part of the galaxy that we haven't explored yet. Though the cuteness of the suburban, or like the familiarity of it, is almost in a way distracting us from them talking about the barrier. And I noticed so many times that the kids were getting in trouble for going beyond where they were supposed to. So there's definitely a secret that this planet at is it at Adelin or at
At
Atten?
Atten, at Atten,
At Atten. Yeah.
at Atten.
Definitely a secret that ne will be told, I guess.
I guess it was a world from, like, I guess it's almost like a time capsule world. That's what I kind of had the impression of, because when Wim's father gives him the credits that were supposed to be like his lunch money for the week, that was Old Republic credits. And so, and like you were saying with the barrier, it obscured the planet, I guess, from everybody else in the galaxy. And the way that, well, I forget what the term was. The was it like the great purpose or something? The assessor lady was talking about how the kids were going to be tested. They're going to have their assessment, and it was for like the higher purpose or something. And I guess that's something that's just like in their society. So there's something weird, like you're saying, something weird's going on there that I'm excited to see what becomes of that or what the truth is. But it does seem to me that it's some sort of mystery world. And like we figure out further in the episode, when they mention it to some of the pirates, they're like, "What? The lost world of treasure?"
Oh, and episode two, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm excited to see what that's all about.
Me too. It's interesting to think that there is this planet out there in this universe that, is so set in their ways and like so comfortable with how it is, and them not knowing. There's a show like that, or like a book, or man, what is it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Feel like I do.
It's like
Oh my gosh.
going beyond the walls or whatever is like forbidden, or I mean, there's a lot of dystopian stories like that, like Divergent and The Hunger Games, and I'm trying to, but there's definitely like an older one that is leaving me.
I know what you're saying. Like I'm trying to think.
I don't even know what to look up on Google for it.
Girl, I don't know, but I'm
Another one of my favorite things about the technical aspects of these two episodes were, I think the sound design was really well done, especially there was a couple of scenes like the ship turning on at the end of episode one, I think was really great, or even just something as simple as like them driving the speeder bike, or the beginning of episode one where all of the pirates are fighting, which was one of my favorite scenes, I think. I they're really like digging into the pirate aspect in almost like a stereotypical way, but in a good stereotypical way, like I don't know, like Peter Pan in space.
yes.
And pirates in space, yeah.
Yeah, I felt the same way.
Also, the set design is fantastic. I think that it was between the volume and like practical, like both. I think it was both, because
Yeah,
they were testing that out, like testing those waters out.
I think one of my favorite like scenes visually was building off of the awesome sound design of the ship starting up. That was really cool, and how it like panned the ship and showed like all the terminals and consoles lighting up and everything. And then how the ship like rising out of the ground and like how it was dark, but then like the lights of the ship, like your classic, oh, the kids found a UFO and now the UFO is coming like out of the mountain, you know, like space. What's that movie? Is it Journey or something? Was it Witch Mountain?
Oh, with that Fanning gal, or one of the, I don't know.
Yeah, then
Yeah,
that was based off
blonde.
another movie. You know what I'm
I know
talking about?
exactly which one you're talking about.
Okay,
The two blonde.
so it just, yeah, so it has that vibe. Yeah, and like the spaceships rising up out of the ground, and the kids like hanging out of the side of the airlock,
Also gave me
and
really, it also gave me
oh.
really big Super 8 vibes. That's what I'm
Yeah.
thinking of Dakota Fanning, where it's like all these kids wanting to make a movie and then they get stuck with the, or they're making the movie and a train crashes and it's because of aliens. So it's like this series of events that lead them toward, yeah, it's got those, it has a little bit of all of these movies, which I think is a really job well done.
Yeah, because I didn't feel like, oh, this is kind of cheesy or this is cliche. Like, it felt like a really good homage to all of these influences,
Yeah, exactly.
which just makes me that much more stoked to see the rest of the series, because I know it's probably just going to build on all these things that it's laid the groundwork for.
Yeah, makes me jealous of the people who have already seen episode three.
I know. I wanted to see more of Jod. I thought we were going to get a little bit more of him in episode two. So seeing him only at the end, I was like, oh, where's episode three?
I know. And it'll them making this a holiday show coming out in December and like unrolling through the holiday season, I think was such a good land. It definitely has like a Christmassy vibe to it.
Well,
In
you're
a
right,
way.
because Christmas is such a sentimental time to so many people, and this show has such like nostalgic, sentimental vibes. So it really, like you said, it really fits perfectly.
Yeah, I think so too. It's definitely, it has a comforting feel to it in a way, but also not so comfortable where we're not anticipating something because, you know, obviously episode two leads into the greater mystery when we get to this pirate port essentially, and everyone starts, all these kids start to find out that, you know, the planet that they live on isn't what they seem or what it seems, so yeah.
Yeah. I think another thing that I really loved about it was the fact that like these kids didn't know each other from the start.
Yeah.
So not we've got some who have known each other, so like Fern and KB are friends and Wim and Neil are friends, but now so we get like the friendship aspect and then we get them becoming friends with each other. So the part specifically where in episode two they've had the encounter with all the pirates and Fern has her blaster, which I was like, where did that come from? Where did she get that? I
Yeah,
missed that part.
I think my husband literally said those exact words out loud too.
Yeah, she's so sneaky. I love her. But anyway, us we'll get to that. When she is like, oh, you know, let me and KB go. And Wim is behind her, and he's like, "What? What about us?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, and the boys." I thought that was so cute,
Yeah.
but yet she like, she's got that begrudging sort of like, I guess I'm partially responsible for them too, you know, sort of
Because
take on it.
she in a way got them into this mess.
Yeah, they've been blaming Wim, but. It's as much her fault. I think the true innocents here are Neil and KB.
I know. I love that KB seems to be Fern's voice of reason.
Yeah.
And I
She's
love,
a good friend.
yeah, I love her little, her visor. I think she's cute when she lifted up to look at the monkey. I thought that that was sweet.
Yeah.
A softie.
Oh, it's sweet 'cause like Neil obviously cared for the little space rat at the end when it crawled out of SM-33, and then KB, like you said, you know, being enamored by the other little creatures. They both have soft hearts for the critters.
Yeah, I also kind of wanted to talk about the, well, I guess we already did kind of touch on it. It was supposed to be the test. Fern's mom. I wanted to talk about Fern's mom. I don't know. I like, did she, I don't know, what did you think about her? She's on the poster, so she seems to have a pretty prominent role.
I expect that she and Wim's dad are gonna be partnering up trying to save the kids, or they're gonna meet up at some point probably, but I kind of got the sense that she is sort of like trying to maintain the status quo, whatever the society is. And Fern is kind of bending under that pressure, or trying not to bend under that pressure that her mom sort of is putting on her. And so that's why we see Fern, going behind her back. She's racing bikes. She's not at school. She's pretending she's studying, but she's not. She's your classic rebellious daughter. And in some way, I feel that Fern and Wim are alike in that sense, that Fern doesn't feel like she can be honest with her mother. She doesn't, her and her mom aren't connecting very well at this point. They're not on the same page. Her mother obviously seems to be thinking of her daughter in a way that Fern isn't actually, she's not actually like that. She wants her daughter to be at the top of the class. And I guess I didn't really understand. I probably should just rewatch this scene. But the scene where she's holding up, I guess, like a little badge of significance that Fern is supposed to have, like she's head of the class or something. And she seems like saying that that's like really important. I don't know if it's like particularly important in their specific society that Fern has this designation. But, and going back to what I was saying, I think that Fern's mother and Wim's father have a similar relationship with their children. Wim's father is working all the time. He doesn't even have time to read Wim like a bedtime story, which crushed me. He's like, "Oh, you're too old for that." I was like, "What are you kidding? What do you mean? This is your son. You won't read him, and you don't have a mom." Apparently, his mom's not around anymore, which rest in peace, I guess, if she's dead. But yeah, so. Just, I feel like Wim and Fern are in similar situations and they just don't realize that they're in similar situations. So I kind of hope that we see perhaps Wim and Fern bonding over that or realizing that about each other. I feel like they could be stronger friends that way in the end.
No, I definitely think so. I noticed that too, the difference in the I don't want to say neglected kid, but the difference in a neglected kid, like one of them can be very sassy and rambunctious and rebellious, and then Wim is very, like wants to escape and plays and
They're your typical latchkey kids.
exactly.
And it's sad.
It is sad. It's one of those things where you feel badly because in a way you almost understand the parents because like you learned that Wim's dad is dead or Wim's mom is dead and he's working all day and he has this kid to keep track of and he's trying to like make ends meet and you feel badly for Wim also because he drops his friend Neil off and there's this entire what did Jacob say? He said, "Can we call them a parade?" There's this entire parade of Neils and they're cute and they're hugging and they're happy to see Neil when he gets home. And I think that Wim just wants his dad to recognize his absence and a little bit more.
Yeah. Oh, that scene made me so sad too, where he's like looking in the window and sees them all like greeting each other. Oh, and he goes home and he doesn't even get a bedtime story from his father. Man.
I
That's
know.
rough. But then his dad is running through the forest for him. So, ugh.
I know. I have a feeling that it's his dad is going to be the one to save the day. Save
Yeah, he'll realize just how much his son means to him.
the lack of humans in the school. Was also something that really stood out to me because where are they? Why is it all droids? I guess. Is this the Star Wars equivalent of AI taking over people's jobs?
I know, that made me shiver.
You're shiver me timbers.
I know, as a teacher myself, I can't imagine. Please don't replace me or you. Well, okay, and I really related to the droid when like Neil keeps, raising his hand. He like stood up and the droid's like, sit down, sit down. I literally had a moment like that today in class with a kid. I was like, please sit down. Please sit down.
I know. Even as a
I had a flashback.
university teacher, I've had to tell kids to sit down. They really don't age, even in university. I also freaking loved the Etch-a-Sketch desk. I know that it wasn't an Etch-a-Sketch, but it's like it was the same concept. That was so good. Like that idea is just fantastic. And the fact that he was drawing on it and it was a Jedi. I was like, man, I want an Etch-a-Sketch desk.
And that leads me into, because we haven't talked about it yet, just how much Wim admires the Jedi and wants to be a Jedi. And it just kind of leads me back to wondering, like, how much does this world know about what's been going on in the rest of the galaxy all this time? How much have they been cut off? Do they know what's been happening in recent history? Like, do they know about the Empire even? Like,
Yeah.
But I love how much he wants to be a Jedi, and how Neil called him out. He's like, you basically said that you want to be a Jedi. He's like, no, I didn't. He's like, you basically did. And he's like being a good friend. And when he goes home, he's like, you'll do great tomorrow. And he's like being really nice and encouraging to Wim, even though he still is trying to like keep him down to earth. He's like, you need to study and you'll do good, get your head out of the clouds, Wim. But Wim can't do that. He's got too much of the hero's heart in him. He's got adventure in him, and he can't keep his hands off things. I love how much Wim can't he always is going to touch something and they're like, don't touch that. He's like, I wasn't gonna. He was.
Oh, absolutely. Neil is such Neil is like the friend that everybody wishes they had. They're so Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I'm forgetting their names. Oh my, but the two like main characters in Diary of a Wimpy Kid are so them. We could talk about like the classroom and that all day, but I really want to talk about the pirates in episode two because Smee SM33 turned on with the stupid rat in his eye and his what the hell sure attitude. I love him. I love him. He's probably going to be a favorite. I hope they don't K2SO him.
They can't. This is a children's show. They can't do that to us. They already gave us like a scary moment where at the end of episode two he's down for the count. So they can't actually get rid of him. I say, crossing my fingers, knocking on wood, please. I love how Fern kind of was pulled a fast one on him. I was like, I killed the captain, so I'm the captain now.
What
And
the
Wim's
hell?
like, I want to be the captain.
Oh, you know what? This movie also has very similar. This movie, this show has very similar vibes too. Do you remember that movie with, or the movie with Kristen Stewart and Josh Hutcherson? They play the board game and they get sent to space
Oh.
to the Z, and these like,
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Zathura?
Yeah,
No.
I think so.
Girl, you just like unlocked a little memory in my brain. Zathura. Yeah. Oh my God. Someone said Zathura. Oh, I didn't. Wow. Zathura is a sequel to Jumanji. Wow. Kristen Stewart was 15 in that movie.
Yeah, she was really young. It has those similar vibes to it, where it's a kids movie, but it's not really a kids movie. It's just a movie with kids in it that kids
Yeah.
watch. I feel like that's how Skeleton Crew is marketed. Like, it's not a kids show, but it has kids in it. Also,
Yeah.
like Stranger Things. Not to keep,
Yeah.
but yeah.
Well, it's got the same sort of aura in a sense. But back to the pirates. What was the name? Is it Borgo? What's the name of the spaceport? The pirate spaceport? I think it was called like Borgo or something. Borgo. It had like a tagline, something about you might die. Poor Borgo appeared in a 30-year-old novel and actually was first referenced in Star Wars Smuggler's Guide in 2018. I love when they pull things like that from little reference books.
Okay, speaking of reference, the reference to the holiday special on the table was so funny. The little kids watching the dancing on the Deseret table or whatever, the holiday table, it was cute. Somebody was funny on Blue Sky. I forget who it was, but they were like, "I thought you said there was no big cameos or big references." They were like, "This is massive."
When I saw the first shot of it, I was just like staring at it, like, I know I've seen this before. Where have I seen this before? It's so weird. And then I was like, oh, but yeah, I loved the shadow port, shadow spaceport. And I thought it was really touching how the lady that found Fern and KB, noticed them and was like, you need to get out of here. You're kids. Like, let me help you get off of this rock. I thought that was really cute. And I mean, she seemed to have decent intentions. Like, she really, really did want to help the girls, which I thought was really sweet. So
Yeah.
I almost wonder if she's going to show up in a future episode, maybe episode 3, kind of come back around and maybe try to help them again, or she makes another appearance. But that was really touching that she saw them and wanted to help them. We got all the pieces are in place, all the characters are introduced, we understand who they are. Now let's head off into the stars and see what happens. We also got a mention to Adelon and Aldani by Smee, SM33, as he's naming off different places that start with an A that they possibly might want to go to, and they're like, no, at Atten. But I gasped when he mentioned Adelon and Aldani.
I know, because he says that Aldani is a sulfurous bog world, which means that the Empire destroyed it.
That makes me so upset.
It does. Enderisms in a Skeleton Crew, but at what cost? There goes the headcanon that the delusional one that Jin and Cassian went to Aldani together. Well, it was already delusional that they were able to go anywhere outside of the event. So it was a delusional headcanon of a delusional headcanon.
Yeah, they lived and they went there.
Well, I think some of my final thoughts about both episodes was that there were some pros and cons. I think the pros outweighed the cons. I loved it more than I had anything negative to say about it. I don't think I have anything negative to say about it. I do have to say that, like, these were certainly the first two episodes of the greater story. Like, it set a lot of stuff up for the rest of the story. I think it did a good job introducing these characters and really getting us into the vibes of what the show is going to be. And, you know, we learned a lot about the characters' backstories and, like, down to what their parents are like and why they are the way that they are, essentially. So it's notable, I think, that Fern and Wim are the main two characters, I think. I would have liked to see almost like a switch back and forth where it was like pirates and the kids. Like almost like a dual POV where it was like we get a couple scenes with the pirates, a couple scenes with the kids, and we kind of check in on both, and then their paths cross because we see Brutus at the beginning and then we see Brutus at the end of the second episode. But I guess the story is not really about the pirates, it's about the kids and their connections to, and their soon to have connection to these pirates. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, I really don't have much to, I don't have any really any critiques or anything. I
Yeah, definitely
or
no
anything.
technical critiques.
Yeah, everything just was just so fun and engaging, and I was laughing a lot. I was very much tickled. So
Yeah.
I really don't have anything to say in the way of like I wish it was this way or that way more than whatever, but I really only have praise for it. It was just so nice to sit down and turn on a new Star Wars and just be like letting myself just fully enjoy it. I wasn't stressed. I wasn't worried about the characters. I was like, this is the kids are the main characters. I just get to kind of relax and yeah, there will be stakes, but I don't really have to worry about them meeting an untimely end. So it was nice to sort of engage with Star Wars in that sort of headspace. There's a time and a place for angst and sorrow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a great time and I'm really excited for more, and I'm excited to see Jod, more of Jod and Fern. I love Fern, and I feel like Fern is gonna give Jod a major migraine. And maybe like some gray hairs. He will have met his match, I feel like. I feel like Jod is very much a smooth talker. I mean, we see him, if he is the captain from the beginning of the show, we see how much of a smooth talker he is and telling sort of tales. And Fern is the same way. So I feel like they're gonna butt heads and it's gonna be really funny.
Yeah.
He's not gonna be able to pull one over on the kids. She's always gonna be there to be like, doubt.
Actually,
She's
so
like, I know you're lying because I would do the same thing.
yeah, I definitely think that he's gonna be the fatherly figure that he never probably intended to be, and the kids never thought that they would have, I guess. Well, Fern, I feel like it makes the most sense because as of we know of right now, she only has a mom. So it'll be cool. I'm really excited for the rest of the season. I'm really intrigued about the one episode that's less than 20 minutes. I think we were off, well, we were off the show when we said this, but where we were like, it'll be like a Tales of Ba Sing Se type thing where it's like a moment in time or like a blip, I guess. Or it's a really intense episode. It's like the last 20 minutes of Alien Romulus or, well, hopefully not. Hopefully we don't get the last 20 minutes. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like an intense story, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there must have been a reason they decided to do it that way and make it that short. So yeah, like you, I wonder the why.
I
We
trust
shall
that.
see.
Yeah, I
Me
think.
too.
But do you have any guesses for the next episode? Or right now, I don't. Don't have.
I really don't have any guesses, but I feel like everybody should know this about me by now. But I really hope we get someone mentioning Hondo Ohnaka. Like he's around. Like it cannot go the whole dang series without mentioning my favorite pirate guy.
Yeah.
Like it would be a crime for them to do that. I would be going to Star Wars' doorstep and demanding an explanation. So, my only prediction, anticipation is our fine space pirate captain, Hondo Ohnaka.
I think you'll get him. I think you will. I think it's the season of Hondo Ohnaka. I think he's gonna come down. I think he's gonna have the most like Santa Claus entrance, like come down like a chimney. I don't know, like a garbage shoe, but it's light. I don't know. What?
I hear his voice, I will die.
I know. Well, I would have to fly to you and revive you.
Yeah. Yes, you will. It'll be like calling a welfare check on me. I'll go radio silent.
Yeah.
I'll have passed away.
We actually have a rule book for Stardust Records and for our friendship where one of the number one rules on Linz's side is that if Hondo Ohnaka is ever mentioned, I have to perform CPR on her. Has
Yes. Because what will happen is I will climb up to my roof. I will stand up there and I will scream very loudly, and then I will be falling off the roof and I'll need some medical attention.
Well,
Yes.
every week we'll be here recording a review episode of the new episode of Skeleton Crew. So you can find us here next week as well, either on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. A Wednesday, right? Because they premiere on Tuesday nights. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're from here,
Yeah.
from the United States, or if you're on a similar time zone to the Pacific Northwest, then
We'll try to keep to that. We want to get it to you guys
quick.
quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can find me at Andorisms on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, and now also Blue Sky. Where can we find you, Linz?
You can find me at A Cosmic Love on Twitter and Blue Sky, and at Rebel Risen on Instagram and TikTok.
And you can find the podcast at Stardust Records with the O at Blue Sky without the O on Instagram and Twitter. Well, that's all for this week. We'll see you next week for another episode of Skeleton Crew and Stardust Records. Woohoo! Ahoy is like hello, right? Is it like aloha, where it's hello and goodbye, or is ahoy like hello? Okay. Well,
A girl,
bye-bye.
I don't know, signing off.
Timbers equals shivered.